605 at Talk 107.3 FM WBRP. Good morning, everybody. Brian Haldane here with you. And man, we are ready to roll this morning. Got a jam-packed show. Got a lot of ground to cover, and time is short. 2 hours is going to fly by today. 2 hours is not going to be enough today. As I scroll through all my papers looking for my guest rundown, here we go. Here's what's in store. You ready for this? All right, Saints are in minicamp right now. Larry Holder from The Athletic joins me in 10 minutes to talk about Saints minicamp. John Stewart called out Congressman Mike Johnson in front of that panel about the 9/11 Victims Fund. Oh, well, Congressman Mike Johnson is going to join us right at 6:30. We're actually going to have to kind of flip the clock around a little bit to get to Mike Johnson and then get to news. We'll kind of do that inverted. Also, the Pelican Institute's Renee Amar going to join me at 6:25. We are talking about the private insurance industry and what the expansion of Medicaid is doing to the private insurance industry here in Louisiana. Coming up in the 7 o'clock hour, Richard Lipsy. You know the name. Local businessman. He's been very, very active when it comes to LSU. Well, Richard Lipsy is going to join me at 7:15 to talk about his latest blog at putlouisianafirst.com. If you want to, you might want to check that out beforehand. Go ahead, read the blog, then tune in at 7:15 to hear Richard Lipsy. We've got Crime Stoppers at 7:35. And then, to round out the show, I kind of have to do this. Today is June 13th, which, well, first of all, it's my wife's birthday. So, happy birthday, sweetheart. I'm going to have to repeat that later because I don't even think she's up yet. But, along with being my wife's birthday, Senator Bill Cassidy is going to be in front of the Senate today declaring it National Seersucker Day. I'm not a seersucker guy. I know it's an unpopular opinion. I know, especially in the Deep South, that's going to make me a pariah. I am just not a seersucker guy. Will Aguirre from Carriages is going to join me to round out the show today to try, for the love of God, and explain the appeal of seersucker. But before we get to any of that, we start off with Top Stories and Trending.
Now, Top Stories and Trending, keeping you informed on the stories people will be talking about today. Number 5.
Top Stories and Trending, of course, brought to you by DaleBuysHousesNow.com. You could turn that ugly house into cash, any house, any condition, with DaleBuysHousesNow.com. Really strange story we've been following out of Denham Springs. Nearly a month after two dogs kept an entire street on lockdown, attacking humans and killing two horses, a Livingston Parish judge ruled Tuesday that the dogs need to be euthanized. David Dixon said two of his horses were killed this year by dogs. Another neighbor said on Mercier Road said he was attacked. Dixon said about 10 of his neighbors filled the Livingston Parish Courthouse Tuesday. They were very pleased to hear the judge's ruling that the dogs would need to be euthanized. I mean, the whole thing, it sounds like a Stephen King novel, right? You get these rampant dogs are killing horses or keeping people on lockdown. Well, here's the update where it gets weird. Officials say Shane Nobles is on the run from authorities after a judge ordered his dogs to be put down. It's believed he's traveling with the two animals. An arrest warrant's been signed and issued for Nobles in for obstruction of a court order. Anyone with information on his whereabouts is asked to call 225-686-2241.
Number 4.
A mother and her son were arrested after they allegedly set fire to a car in a Walmart parking lot and let it spread to other vehicles. State Fire Marshal's office says Joshua Bougier, 24, and Sylvia Williams, 63, were arrested. The fire happened back in late February outside the Walmart in Donaldsonville. Investigators determined Bougier and Williams intentionally set the first car on fire, which spread to two other nearby vehicles. The Fire Marshal's office say witness interviews suggest the two had been involved in an ongoing feud with the owner of the car.
Number 3.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you've heard the squeaky wheel gets the grease. How about the bird finger online? Something has to change. That's the reaction of homeowners, council members, and now Mayor President Sharon Westbrook towards the city's sanitation contractor. Complaints on late pickups or none altogether for Republic services are getting worse. For weeks, many council members have been hearing from angry constituents looking for answers. Well, looks like they're going to be getting some as the mayor is demanding changes from Republic services.
Number 2.
John Paul Funes was in court yesterday for his first hearing. The fired president of Our Lady of the Lake Foundation, John Paul Funes, was charged in federal court, Tuesday for allegedly defrauding the organization of more than $500,000. He'll be back in court next week to enter his formal plea. He's expected to plead guilty.
Number one.
Bond has been set for an Iberville Parish deputy arrested for allegedly filming the rape of a one-year-old boy. The bond for 42-year-old Shadrick Jones, who allegedly incited the incident, is set at $465,000. Bond for Aisha Todd, the woman accused of performing the acts, is set at $435,000. That's a look at your top stories. Presented by DaleBuysHousesNow.com. Yeah, you can turn your ugly house into cash with DaleBuysHousesNow.com. Check them out if you've got an unwanted property. A property with damage. A property you need to sell as is. A fixer-upper that you haven't fixer-upped. DaleBuysHousesNow.com. And oh, hey, if you've got a rental property, if you've got an apartment complex, Dale can help you out there too. DaleBuysHousesNow.com or give him a call at 291-8000. 291-8000 for DaleBuysHousesNow.com. Here's a quick look at what's trending. Local model went from the boot to the Big Apple to make her dreams come true. After being featured in Sports Illustrated, Brooks Nader is now competing to land on the cover of the magazine next year. The Episcopal High graduate says modeling was always a passion. She's leaving Tulane University to pursue her modeling career. She needs a little help, though. If you go to WBRZ.com, they've got the full story there. You can cast your vote to vote for Brooks Nader to be the cover model next year for the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue. That's a look at what's trending. Quick break, then traffic, then Larry Holder with sports on Talk 107.3 FM. 6:15 to Talk 107.3 FM. Time for us to talk a little sports and time for us to welcome to the show for the first time, Larry Holder from The Athletic. Larry, good morning, man. Welcome aboard.
Brain, the fact you're on the air this early, my goodness, this has got to be a new world for you, my friend.
It's like a grown-up gig. I feel like I should be wearing like a three-piece suit, you know, like a vest and maybe even have a monocle, but no, I'm still the same guy in ratty blue jeans, so...
Hey, at least you're not pulling off the Dumb and Dumber tuxedo look. There you go.
Well, you know, that's not till casual Friday. All right, let's dive in. It's minicamp time for the Saints. Drew Brees was out there yesterday, was not there on Tuesday. There's no story there, right? I mean, Drew Brees has been around a billion years. He shouldn't have to be at minicamp at all.
The only story is that he's going to court against, I guess, a former friend of his a battle over jewels, because that's why he missed camp. I mean, last time he missed any kind of mini camp was in 2012, and that was over a contract. He was franchise tagged, and he was not signed. So that year, it was Joe Vitt as the head coach, and it was Chase Daniel as the quarterback, because that was the bounty year. So it's just a story just because you're wondering where Drew is, and He's missing because of a bizarre situation about misvalued jewelry, apparently.
There is no other world where that exists other than the NFL.
There might be no other world where that exists outside of maybe Drew Brees or like Tom Brady. I think those are the only two where this would exist.
Yeah, you're probably spot on there. All right, shifted from Drew Brees is actually back at minicamp now over to the defensive side of the football. Tell us what it means for the Saints franchise to lock up Cam Jordan here.
It's something that I think they knew had to get done. He's outperformed his contract, even though he's one of the more highly paid players in the NFL. But there were people who weren't as productive as him getting more money. And I think the Saints gave him a solid. He had 2 years left in his deal, and now he's taking care of him. And now it's not as lucrative as, say, DeMarcus Lawrence or Khalil Mack, but it's also because Cam Jordan is older. And so that's part of it. But they've taken care of him, and you know, he's one of the best pieces in the puzzle with the Saints, and to me one of, if not the best overall defensive end in the NFL, and to get this done, I think it is well deserved for both sides.
Yes, it's a win-win. Clearly for the Saints, you're locking up a franchise guy for a few more years. For Cam Jordan, I mean, there's a lot of guaranteed money in this contract.
And deservedly so. I mean, you don't want to just give inflated money. I mean, he deserves the money. And instead of having contract squabbles, and this is the second time they've taken care of Cam Jordan, and they've done it before they had to. This goes to show you how much they value him and how great of a player he is. And so, like I said, it's a win-win for both sides. And if you take Cam Jordan away from this defense, they're in trouble. And so that just goes to show you how much he should be valued with his team.
Bird's eye view of the Saints in 2019. Are they picking up where they left off, or should, as fans, we expect any drop off or regression?
Look, it's human nature to fall off, and we almost saw it in 2018. People forget the Saints could have easily started 0-3. You lose to Tampa, you beat Cleveland, and you should have lost, and you won in, by the skin of your teeth in overtime in Atlanta. So, you know, picking up where they left off, I mean, that's going to be hard given not one but 2 years of kind of depressing endings. But, look, this team is one of the best teams in the NFL. Talent-wise, and I feel like they've only improved this offseason as opposed to gotten worse. So pick up where they left off as being thought of as one of the best teams in the NFL. I mean, if that's what you're asking, I think that's a viable expectation for these guys.
He's Larry Holder. You can check his work out at theathletic.com. Larry, thank you so much for the time this morning, man.
You the brain. That's why you the man.
Too much. Love that guy. We're going to hear a lot from him during football season, by the way. TheAthletic.com, if you haven't checked out his work, you can follow him on Twitter, at Larry Holder as well. And thanks again to Larry for stopping in. All right, we got Fox News or Fox Business Report coming your way in about 45 seconds. Once we get through with the Fox Business Report, we'll check traffic real quick, and then we're going to check in with the Pelican Institute because we've been seeing something happen recently. Through the expansion of Medicare, there's always unintended consequences whenever you do anything. That's just the way things happen. Well, one of the unintended consequences of expanding Medicare is it's putting a hurt on the private insurance industry. We're going to talk about that with Renee Amar from the Pelican Institute. Also, if you have not yet heard John Stewart's testimony in front of Congress, well, one of our own congresspersons, Mike Johnson from Northwest Louisiana, he got personally called out. We're going to talk with Mike Johnson to rebut right here. First of all, here's the Fox Business Report. The headline on the Wall Street Journal opinion page reads, Medicaid expansion has Louisianans dropping their private plans. First of all, props to WSJ for having Louisianans and not Louisianians. One of my own personal triggers and bugaboos. But to talk about that right now is Renee Amar. She's the Vice President of Government Affairs for the Pelican Institute. Renee, welcome back to Talk 107.3. How are you?
I'm wonderful, Brian. Thank you so much for having me on.
Glad to have you on. Okay, first of all, does it get under your skin, or is it just something that I'm personally one of my own triggers that I need to let go of? Louisianans is the correct pronunciation, correct wording, not Louisianians, like so many people say.
No, I think that's a Brian issue.
Okay. These are things. I got to know my limitations. I got to know when to let go, and that's fair. That's a completely fair criticism. All right, so back to the actual meat of what we're talking about here. Medicaid expansion has Louisianans dropping their private plans. Do we have numbers on this? Like, how many of us are doing this?
The numbers we have are not exact, down to, one, two, three people. What we do know is that we did some public records requests between LDH and LSU over the survey that they did. And they do have data that shows that there are tens of thousands of people that have dropped their private insurance to get on taxpayer-funded Medicaid coverage.
Tens of thousands. Can we narrow that down a little more, or is it just going to stay that vague?
Probably right now it's going to stay that vague. The department says it's between 1% to 3%. Our numbers show it's between 30% to 40%. We think it's probably roughly around 35%. Obviously, that's a huge disparity in the numbers.
Why is there such a disparity?
Because of the way that they calculate their data and the way that we think the data should be calculated is where you run into the big difference in that. There's also been several studies done, like over the last 4 to 5 years on this particular issue. And of those 4 studies done, 3 of them will tell you that crowd out is at least 30% in other states as well.
Okay, and this is the part that I can't get past, is that on day one, you have so many people with private insurance and so many people with Medicaid. On day two, those numbers are different, and you just subtract one from the other. I don't get why there would need to be a recalculation.
Well, and part of the problem is that the department quit collecting the data.
Oh, well, that's, I don't know, convenient?
Yeah, it really becomes a major issue, especially when, exactly what you said, I had private sector coverage in July. I'm now on Medicaid in August, and you would think that it would be pretty easy to extrapolate that information. But if you quit collecting the data, it's kind of hard to come by.
What are the effects of this for those of us that still have private insurance? I mean, is this going to affect our insurance? Is it going to affect our premiums? Are we already seeing any effects?
So, I mean, the term is called crowd out because, right, you're crowding out the private sector coverage into the government-funded coverage. A, that ends up costing all of us in the private sector more money. B, just as a taxpayer in the state of Louisiana, we are literally allowing able-bodied, working-age adults to be on Medicaid expansion, like first ever in its history, instead of like having to share the load and pay for their private sector coverage like they were doing before. We also believe eventually, if you and I are in a Blue Cross plan and Blue Cross just lost 50,000 people that are now covered on Medicaid, obviously that puts more pressure on our private sector plan.
Renee, I'm going to have to jump in right there because we're coming up on a hard break with CBS, so we've got to check in with the news. Listen, I want to extend this interview, so go to talk1073.com after the show. We're going to go ahead and extend it out, get the full discussion with Renee Amar. You can get it at talk1073.com. Renee, I appreciate your patience in doing this. Congressman Mike Johnson, coming your way after this. 6:32 at Talk 107.3 FM, WBRP. The nation was captivated by a roughly 7.5 to 8 minute speech by Jon Stewart the other day. It was about 9/11 first responders, and it included this excerpt.
Mr. Johnson, you made a point earlier, and it was one that we have heard over and over again in these halls, and I couldn't help but to answer to it, which was, you said, look, you know, you guys are obviously heroes, and 9/11 was a big deal, but, you know, we have a lot of stuff here to do, and, you know, we got to make sure there's money for a variety of disasters, hurricanes and tornadoes, but this wasn't a hurricane. And this wasn't a tornado. And by the way, that's your job anyway.
A very impassioned testimony by Jon Stewart. You'd have to be absolutely heartless not to feel something walking away from it. A lot of congresspersons were not in the room. Congressman Mike Johnson was in the room, which is probably why he got called out. He joins us right now on Talk 107.3 FM. Congressman Johnson, good morning. How are you, sir?
Hey, doing great. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad to have you on here. I wanted to give you a forum to at least, you know, kind of respond. How did that make you feel sitting up there?
Well, look, I felt exactly as Jon Stewart did, and I talked to him about it after the hearing and you know, on the record during the hearing about it. What he was reacting to is my explanation. I was the only Republican in the hearing for much of it because it was a busy day and it was a subcommittee hearing. But I told him, I said, look, the reason that we're here, this is the first time I've had a chance to take a crack at this, you know, because the September 11th Victim Compensation Fund was set up by Congress on a five-year reauthorization timetable. And I explained to these heroes in the audience who suffered so much that the reason that Congress does 5- and 10-year authorizations is so that they can have oversight on to make sure the money's being spent carefully, wisely, and not, you know, subject to fraud and all the other problems. And that's frustrating to all of them, just as it is to us. But this is a permanent reauthorization. I'm a co-sponsor of the legislation. We've got over 315 co-sponsors now. It's going to pass unanimously almost, I'm sure, in the House, probably in the Senate as well, and it's the right thing to do. So Jon Stewart was frustrated. I am frustrated. We're all frustrated. It's just a shocking thing. It's an incomprehensible amount of damage that these terrorists did to our country on 9/11, and we're all still suffering for it.
Yeah, I mean, every ounce of that is true, and there's no way that we can – there's no way we could go back in time to help them in the past. We can only pick up and move forward from here. What was your life like? What was your office like the 24 hours right after this? I mean, were you just flooded with calls, tweets, texts, everything?
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, the hearing was covered live on television, so everybody saw it. I mean, look, when I gave my comment and said Republicans are going to vote for it, probably unanimously as well. I got standing ovation. Look, I didn't just sympathize with the people that testified, these heroes who are suffering. I empathize. I explain my life stories. My own father was a firefighter who was permanently disabled, critically burned in the line of duty. He got burned 80% of his body, third-degree burns back in the 80s. He inhaled toxic dust, not unlike what they did at 9/11, and he suffered with that the remaining 32 years of his life. So I know struggles that these families have been through, these heroes. There's over 40 types of cancer that are directly related to the toxic dust that these heroes breathed on top of that pile while they were cleaning up and serving all of us. There's all sorts of lung maladies, respiratory diseases. This tragedy goes on and on and on. And so into the future, into 2090 now, Congress has authorized a fund to take care of those whose injuries and diseases are directly related to that service, and it's the right thing to do. We should take care of our heroes.
And that's that is the right thing to do. And we were talking with Congressman Graves yesterday, and he brought up the BP oil spill, the Deepwater Horizon spill, and how we're still seeing repercussions from that from a health perspective from those who have helped out there. So the fact that it's on through 2090 is will only set up the table the right way for every future. You don't want to say every future tragedy, but that's exactly what it is. Got just about 2.5 more minutes with Congressman Mike Johnson from Northwestern Louisiana. Congressman Johnson, want to ask you about, I know there's no way to crystal, like to look through a crystal ball and see what could have been, because it's only a hypothetical. Would this have passed without John Stewart's testimony?
Yes, and that's the irony of it. I mean, it would have passed probably almost automatically. I mean, the hearing was important. We need these victims and these heroes need a forum to tell their story. It's compelling. It reminds the American people of September 11th as if we would ever forget, and why it's so important to defend our country and to defend freedom and the price that people have paid to do that. That's why the hearing was important, but it wasn't important to compel the action of Congress or to make this happen. As I said, it was already set up on a five-year reauthorization. This just happens to be the fifth year. The good thing is going forward that no one will have to come and testify again on this because it'll be an automatic reauthorization. And, you know, I had somebody yesterday ask me what is potentially the ultimate cost of this. I mean, the truth of the matter is it could be hundreds of billions of dollars. They identified at least 630,000 potential victims who could be claimants at some point over the next few decades, as because some of these cancers and illnesses have a long latency period. So we don't even have an idea of how much this is going to cost us, and that's just part of the ongoing tragedy.
Yeah, and in along with that, you really can't, you can't dwell on the actual cost because it is American lives that we're talking about. So,
right.
I mean, just moving forward, we just got to bow up and do what's right. Looking forward for this bill moving forward, do you see anything standing in its way for final passage?
I don't. Someone asked a question in the hearing if the Senate would, you know, would resist it. I can't see that happening. I think it's going to sail through. I know the president will take great delight in signing it into law, and then we'll be done with this chapter, at least with Congress covering those who gave so much on that day. You know, we've just reached a milestone. We're almost at the milestone where we've actually lost more lives after September 11th than we lost on that day due to the illnesses and everything that's happened. So there's just a lot of people who are really hurting, and they hurt every day. Somebody made the point in the hearing, you and I think about September 11th a lot, and certainly on the anniversary each year, there's moments of silence around the country. But for some of these families, it is a constant thing that they deal with every single day, and they will for the rest of their lives. And so we've got to remember that, and we've got to do the right thing.
Congressman Mike Johnson, I know you got a busy morning. I'm going to let you get on your way, man. I appreciate the time.
Thank you, buddy. All good right, to talk to you.
You too. Thanks. 6:39 to Talk 107.3 FM. We kind of had to jumble up the clock a little bit. We went from CBS straight back into me. Normally we hit local news from Louisiana Radio Network. So let's get ourselves back on track by hitting our local news right now. 6:43 at Talk 107.3 FM, WBRP. Okay, we're already late for our next break. I really screwed up the clock by having Congressman Johnson on, but I felt the content was more important than staying on time. So we'll be caught up after this break. Before this break, I do want to take 60 seconds to update you on a story that we were following a month and a half ago, I guess. The church fires over in St. Landry Parish. Well, U.S. Department of Justice says hate crime charges have been filed against a Louisiana man in connection with the three fires that destroyed predominantly African-American churches earlier this year. A news release from the department says 21-year-old Holden Matthews faces three counts of, quote, intentional damage to religious property, which are hate crime charges. He's also charged with three counts of, quote, using fire to commit a felony. Isn't that the same thing as arson? The indictment says the fires were set because of the religious character of the properties. Matthews has pleaded not guilty to related state charges. His attorney declined comment on the federal charges. We are going to be following this story as it makes its way through the court system. Obviously, that was a lot of lives impacted by that as well. All right, we're coming up on 6:45 at Talk 107.3 FM. Quick break, then traffic, then we should be back on time. All right, 6:46 at Talk 107.3 FM. We should be back on time by now. Your money now is coming your way. I'm just over 3 minutes right now. Got a story I want to talk about because it's another fallout of the legislative session. Not this time around, but next time around. The American Gaming Association's annual report showcasing 2018 casino revenue indicates Louisiana remained flat at just over $2.5 billion, generating just over $600 million in total tax revenue for the state. Casino Association of Louisiana Executive Director Wade Duty says the rest of the nation is evolving due to consumer demand, but Louisiana is falling behind.
we kind of remain locked into a 25-year-old business model. So most of the nation actually trended upwards in gaming revenue, but we are flat, if not in a slight decline.
The Baton Rouge market saw a steep 17.4% gaming revenue drop last year. Duty says a big contributing factor is likely the citywide ban on smoking in bars and casinos put into place in May of 2018.
People that advocate for the ban correctly point out that this market was in a slow decline, but if you actually chart it out on a graph, you can see it just falls off a cliff after the implementation.
Now, while Duty says he's more optimistic about incoming lawmakers to be more open to the gaming industry, the failure of the most recent legislative session to legalize sports betting will also combat revenue growth. Duty adds more of a dip is making casinos hesitant to move on to land.
It's hard to make that case for a publicly traded company to continue to look at Louisiana to invest those dollars when you've got other jurisdictions that are much more business friendly.
Yeah. Duh. I mean, if I can go to Mississippi and I can open up a sports book, or I can go to Louisiana and I could just have a casino, obviously I'm going to go to Mississippi. If I can go to any one of the states where they've legalized gambling, sports betting. If I go to any state where they've legalized sports betting, that's like saying, that's like adding a whole other department to a department store. When you think about it, you walk in, like, I know this is a dated model, but like the reason department stores existed while they did, and I know they're fading because retail is fading overall, but the reason they existed while they did was you walk in, oh, boys' clothes over here, girls' clothes over there, hardware in the back, women's apparel. Okay, well, mom, dad, son, and daughter are all taken care of under one roof. It's the same thing with a casino. Oh, I got slots over here. I got poker over there. How many points is LSU giving up? Oh, I'm all taken care of under one roof. It's the same thing. You don't limit yourself like that, but we do. The smoking thing is interesting, and it's a completely different argument because I don't see us reverting back to that because, I mean, we're just a non-smoking society now, and that will probably evolve and level out a little bit. 650 at Talk 107.3 FM. Here's your money now. .654 at Talk 107.3 FM, WBRP. Good morning, everybody. Brian Haldane here with you. Taylor Sharp producing. We've got the CBS World News Roundup coming your way in a little over 5 minutes. And two stories to cover in this segment that both need attention. The first of which, Taylor, did you catch First Responders Live last night?
I did not.
They were in Baton Rouge. It was the premiere episode, and they were right here in Baton Rouge.
I was changing my sister's tire.
See, this is the thing, man.
Like, I know. I got to get my priorities straight.
So, I know.
It is.
You really need to be planted in front of a TV instead of helping your sister out. Shame on you, sir. So they were in Baton Rouge, and I was really worried that like they were going to make us look like backwoods. Isn't that like a common worry in Louisiana? Anytime you see Louisiana represented on a national, on a network stage, all right, we're all, and in a, no offense to the people in Swamp People, but the guy who wears the overalls with no shirt, I don't know what his name is.
Bruce.
Bruce?
Bruce, yeah.
I would have sworn his name was Nipples McGee. Because, like, that's all I could see.
That's his nickname.
Okay. So, that's what I'm always worried about. Like, you know, take that guy and then put, like, a sheriff's badge on him. You know? So, we didn't look like that. We BRPD looked very professional. Not so much for the criminal side of it, though. But that's the nature of the show. They're supposed to make the criminal side look bad. And I thought a job was well done on First Responders Live last night, and I was kind of proud of our BRPD in that regard. If you didn't catch it, I'm sure reruns are going to be coming out on that, or it's available on demand. It was on Fox, if you missed it. So, that's one story I wanted to talk about. Here's the other one, CBS World News Roundup coming your way in just a minute. Oh, hey, need a preview next hour. Richard Lipsey is going to join me at 7:17. If you don't know who Richard Lipsey is, he's a longtime Baton Rouge businessman, longtime LSU supporter. He's got a blog called Put Louisiana First. And if you haven't seen his latest blog post, you need to. PutLouisianaFirst.com. You're going to want to check out this blog post. He levels some pretty heavy allegations against King Alexander. And Lipsey, you know, LSU's deep in his heart, and that's where he's at. So we're going to talk with him about his research, about his findings, and about his motivations coming up at 7:17. And, of course, Crime Stoppers at 7:35. Got about 60 seconds before we get you to news. The Shreveport City Council voted 6-1 to abolish a 2007 ordinance banning people from wearing pants below their waistlines. ACLU Louisiana Legal Director Katie Schwartzman says the law has proven to be racially motivated, adding the government having the ability to dictate clothing choices is a violation of rights. Quote, we think that violates people's First Amendment rights to freedom of expression, and it's just essentially government overreaching. I don't think anyone wants the government telling us as citizens what we can and cannot wear. Police data shows the ordinance resulted in the arrest of 699 black men and 12 white men. I think the evidence would bear out that this leans towards arresting black people. I really do. So they've abolished the saggy pants law in Shreveport. You know, we just got done talking about elected officials wasting our time. Here's the fun part. They're probably going to re-argue it the next time they get together. World News Roundup coming your way.